The Olympic Games are well underway in France and we're all becoming experts in obscure sports. So this week we're running through the weird history of the Olympics that you may not know. Let me explain.
Let me explain with Sean Defoe, a News Talk original.
Thanks a million for tuning in to Let Me Explain. And hey, if you have the time, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is you're listening. Let's give the podcast a boost over the next few weeks. That sort of summer boost as the good weather comes out. It's rare I get to record a podcast while having sports on the telly in the background. So particularly savouring this week's episode. Now, you know all about the Olympics at this stage and no doubt you've become an expert in your obscure sport of choice. Gotten far too emotionally invested in badminton. Become an eagle-eyed critic of the synchronized diving and wondered just why the hell is skateboarding an Olympic sport as fun as it is to watch. But the Games has a long and frankly weird history. Let's start with an Aussie. Now, many athletes make sacrifices to make the Olympic Games, and you hear them talk about the training, the time away from your family, missing funerals, and the life events that you skip to attend training and give themselves the best opportunity to succeed. Few more so than Matt Dawson. The Australian hockey player broke a finger on his right hand in the build-up to Paris. He was essentially told it would take too long to heal. So, to keep his place on the team and his Olympic hopes alive, Dawson decided to partially amputate the finger. He literally had them chop off a part of a limb to compete at the Olympics.
I had made the decision and then I called my wife and she just said, oh, I don't want you to make a rash decision. But I had all the information that I needed to, I guess, make the decision for not only playing in Paris, but for life after and giving myself the best health.
Would you love to have been in on that particular conversation? Hey, love. Yeah, no, it's broken. Yeah, I'm going to chop it off. Okay, bye. But fair play to Matt Dawson for going the whole nine digits. I mean, yards. But Dawson is far from the only amputee to compete in the Olympics, with one remarkable story from all the way back in 1904. Fifty-six years before the founding of the Paralympic Games, an amputee won six medals, including three golds, in a single day at the 1904 Olympics in St. Louis, Missouri. George Easter was a German immigrant who at some point in his American childhood lost most of his leg, and the records aren't really clear on how, but it's generally thought he was run over by a train. But that didn't stop him being involved in athletics and gymnastics. Somewhat depressingly, there was quite a big demand for prosthesis in America at the time, coming in the decades after their Civil War. Now, Easter didn't have a good start to the 1904 Games. He performed pretty poorly in July. Fortunately for him, though, the Games took place over 5 months back then, rather than just the few weeks it's congested into now, meaning if your form was bad, there was plenty of time to correct it. And he did, on one staggering October day. He scooped three gold medals. Now, two came in the 25-foot rope climbing competition and the parallel bar, so you can kind of put that down to his upper body strength, and he also got silver on the pommel horse and bronze on the horizontal bar. But the truly amazing gold medal came in the long horse vault, where he had to sprint and leap great distances and heights three times to claim a medal, all on just one functional leg. The 1904 Games have gone down in history, though, as one of the most chaotic, and in particular, the marathon. It was just the third iteration of the modern Olympics, and some of this sounds genuinely mad. The 1904 marathon had it all: poison, dog chases, hitchhiking, and stolen peaches. 32 athletes lined up to take on the marathon and just 14 would finish it. Among them were the first two black athletes to take part. The course itself was brutal. It wasn't segregated off as you see now and so wound through the town on hilly ground that was in places strewn with loose rock and dust, and it meant that the runners were interacting with everything around them, from people on the course to trains and automobiles and every other manner of distraction. Indeed, one of the black athletes who finished ninth might have done much better if he hadn't been chased off the course for a mile by a dog. A Cuban postman named Felix also took part. He arrived in New Orleans, but reportedly immediately lost all his money and possessions in a game of dice, and so had to hitchhike to St. Louis to take part in his street clothes. And one of the Americans also taking part took pity on him and brought a scissors to the starting line to cut his trousers into shorts to make it a little easier for him to compete. Support cars used to run by the marathon track, and after a few miles, Felix felt overcome by the dust that they were kicking up, lining his throat, and he was coughing and his eyes were watering, all the rest of it. So he took a nap in a nearby orchard and pilfered some apples while he was at it. Now, those apples happened to be bad and they didn't agree with him, and he's reported to have been quite sick for a few more miles of the race before he met a couple in a car and stole some peaches from them. He finished fourth despite all of that. The competitors wanted more access to food and water. It was 32 degrees when the race was happening. And as part of an endurance experiment, organisers had actually withheld water, except for a well, at the half-mile mark. The two favourites for the marathon were Frederick Lortz, a bricklayer who trained by night after work, and a man called Thomas Hicks. With dust lining his lungs, Lortz dropped out from a leading position in mile number 9, and he then got into a support car to drive him to the stadium. But the car itself broke down in the 19th mile, and Lortz decided he was going to run the rest. He was first over the line to great cheers and applause before being disqualified to boos when they realised he'd actually hitchhiked most of the way. That left Thomas Hicks as the favourite. He had the lead but began to flag badly, and at the time a support team was able to coach and help those athletes who were on the track, and he was given a mixture of egg whites and a chemical substance called strychnine. Now, strychnine is basically rat poison. It can also kill humans by constricting the muscles you need to breathe, but in very small doses, it was used as a stimulant and performance enhancer. Hicks was later given another dose of the drug, more egg whites, and brandy to wash it down. It was enough to see him stumble over the line and take the win, but he was completely out of it. Local newspaper reports paint the scene.
There was not a semblance of the elastic spring with which he had started. He must have heard the uproar around him, but betrayed no sign of it. He was past that. He did look up once when the din was at its height. He was within a few yards of the finish. His lower jaw was hanging as in imbecility. His eyes stared blankly, but his pitiful expression didn't change.
Thus, Hicks won the medal, though he was too weak to accept it, and also became the first recorded case of performance-enhancing drugs being used at the Olympics. He wasn't the last, though. In 1992 in Barcelona, a Chinese volleyball player was found to have taken the same rat poison, and as recently as 2016, a weightlifter from Kyrgyzstan was stripped of his bronze medal for using the substance. It's thought to be widespread in the Tour de France. The 1904 Olympics also was the last time for one event which has been described as the dullest in the history of the Games. It's also possibly the only one that I would genuinely stand a chance of winning if it were brought back today. It's something called the dive for distance, and chances are you probably played some version of it in the swimming pool on holiday. Picture the scene. You stand on a pier at the edge of a becalmed lake, poised to dive in. Gently, you drop into the water, stretching your body to its full length from the tip of your fingers to your outstretched toes. You resurface from the dive, gently drifting in the water, and then you do nothing. No, like literally nothing, like you will be disqualified if you move. The entire goal of this Olympic sport was to gently dive into the water and see how far you can drift without doing anything else before you either need to breathe or a full minute has gone by. The event was won by William Dickey with a distance of 62.5 feet. Now, Dickey was not exactly what you would picture as an Olympic athlete. He was a heavy man, a tall man, a big handlebar mustache, and he competed in a leotard made of cotton. So perhaps no surprise that this was the last time we saw that event in the last 120 years. It's also far from the only weird sport, though. I mean, if I asked you what category Ireland won its first Olympic medal in, what might you say? Rowing? Boxing? Athletics? In fact, it was for painting. Jack B. Yeats took a silver medal for his painting of the Liffey Swim in the 1924 Games, the first time Ireland was recognised as an independent nation at the Olympics. At the time, it was the early Games the International Olympic Committee wanted to award body and mind. And Ireland also took a medal in the literature category. Chorus singing, graphic arts and sculpture were some of the other weird sports, so-called sports, to appear. Many came at the Paris Games of 1900 and many involved animals. That particular game saw the horse long jump. It's exactly what you think. It's the long jump, but for horses, as part of the equestrian event. And it didn't catch on, as they actually didn't jump a huge amount further than human professionals, weirdly. Another was live pigeon shooting. Again, it does what it says in the tin. Competitors had to shoot live pigeons, and if they missed two in a row, they were out. The gold went to Leon de London, who killed 21 pigeons on his way to the medal. It got rather messy, with about 300 pigeons overall killed on the course, and it was cancelled after a backlash from animal rights activists when they moved to clay pigeons instead. But the one that really takes the biscuit is again from France, and it was a test event held in the 1900 Olympics for poodle clipping. The competitors had to clip the fur off as many poodles as they could in the space of 2 hours in front of 6,000 fans. How very French. Another fascinating part of the Olympics is the logistics. And I know what you're thinking. Logistics. Now we're at it. Exciting. But it cost 2 billion euro just to put together the Olympic Village this year, the place where all of the competitors will stay, and even more to kit out a cruise ship in Tahiti for those taking part in the surfing. The beds are made of cardboard to be more sustainable and can allegedly take 250 kilos in weight. There is a massive buffet for the athletes with all sorts of cuisine, 30% of which is plant-based. And despite that, the athletes complained of a shortage of eggs this year. Carrefour, the managers of that, were saying, we are going to get you much, much more eggs. And you can imagine, with all these very fit and lean and lovely athletes in one place, they do a bit of fraternising. So much so that more than 200,000 free condoms will be given to the athletes, or to put it another way, 2 per person per day. It was even more at the Olympics in Rio in 2016 when they gave out 450,000 condoms. Even in Tokyo, when it was COVID times and there was a no fraternization policy in place, they gave out 160,000 condoms, with the official line that they should be taken home as souvenirs. With all the money sloshing around to stage the event, you'd be forgiven thinking that the performers also get huge fees, but Lady Gaga and Celine Dion were not paid for their performances in the opening ceremony. Indeed, in the past, big stars like Paul McCartney were paid just a token £1 to perform at the Olympics. They turned down the fee for the opportunity and the indirect revenue it brings in. Let me know if you've any other mad stories about the Olympics. It has a long and colourful history, and certainly an odd one. This show was presented and produced by myself, Sean Defoe, with the series editor, John Keogh, and I'll chat to you next week.